He's been in over 65 major motion pictures, produced them, written them, from Platoon to Red Dawn, one of my favorites. And, of course, TV shows like Spin City. Right now he's the major star on the CBS program Two and a Half Men. And he's got several new movies coming out this year and next year. And when I got a chance to talk to Charlie Sheen, I was just amazed, because I've talked to a lot of other big Hollywood people. We've had a few of them on this show. And, you know, they call me up sometimes, say, hey, you're doing a great job, or I'm buying 50 copies of your video. And I'm like, no, here, just take it. And but they're not as informed, I have to be honest, as Charlie Sheen. I mean, I talked to this guy like an hour and a half yesterday, and he just really knows what's going on the planet today. But that shouldn't surprise me. His father, Martin Sheen, has been on the front lines, as Mark Twain said in the beginning, a patriot is a scarce man, hated and feared and scorned, but in time when his cause succeeds, the timid join him, because then it cost nothing to be a patriot. And, of course, has been proven right time and time again. It was his father in the days leading up to the war that was the most vocal spokesman in America against this disastrous conflict. And everything he said has now come true. And, of course, Charlie Sheen and his brother are also activists in their own right. And we are just incredibly honored to have Charlie Sheen on with us for the balance of this hour. Mr. Sheen, good to have you with us.
Nice to be here, Alex. How are you?
I'm great. Before we get into the really serious stuff, tell me a little bit about Two and a Half Men.
Well, gosh, we're thrilled. It's we are at the end of our third season. We have three more shows to shoot. Most sitcoms will shoot 22 episodes, but because the network always wants more product, we do 24. So our season will continue when all the other shows have shut down. But it's going good. It's going really good. We've, found ourselves sort of in or around the top 10 for most of this year. And we found out we got picked up for next season, which is fabulous. And what's happening is they're using our show to launch new shows, which is the sign of great confidence and trust in us sort of being the anchor of that Monday night lineup, you know? So with that, I should probably throw out a shameless plug on tonight's show, if that's all right.
Oh, sure. Tell us about tonight's show.
It's entitled The Spit-Covered Cobbler. and it's funny because the title of our show will always relate to a line of dialogue. And so it's about my brother Alan, played by John Cryer, and he's dating a girl who has no money. And so he doesn't have any money himself. I sort of support him on the show because I took him in when he went through a divorce with his kid, played by Angus Jones, right? And so he's dealing with a woman, April Bowlby, who plays Candy on the show. And she's fabulous and she's beautiful, but she's broke. Imagine that, right? So John is forced to pick up the tab for a lot of her bills, and that leads to some pretty funny scenarios.
What time is that showing this evening?
It's on CBS, 9 o'clock, 8 Central.
All right, well, I'll have to tune into that. Now, Mr. Sheen, you have some questions about the official 9/11 story, and we got hooked up because we both mutually have been looking into that.
Sure.
And I wanted just to, I guess, start by what happened on 9/11, what your instincts told you, and really just go from there.
Well, it was interesting. And let me just preface that by saying that I've been a fan of yours for a long time, and I've been following you, and I've seen all of your documentaries, and your research is tireless. And it's interesting because a lot of these guys, you sort of look behind the notes and you start to discover inconsistencies in a lot of the claims that they're making, which pretty much torpedoes the credibility of most of their substance. But with you, that's not the case. And I was always amazed to see that you always had hard data to back up your claims. And so, you know, this was tough for me because for the longest time I've been through
Oh, there certainly is. In fact, we were talking yesterday, and you said over the phone that the biggest conspiracy theory is the official story. I mean, at every point, it's a fabrication. It's a lie. Would you elaborate on that?
Well, yeah. It's like they want to just pigeonhole all of us into this group of conspiracy nutbags when we're not really debating things that are related to UFOs bringing down the towers or Building 7 or the Pentagon, right? And so it's just, you know, it just feels like, you know, there's things in there that we're not the conspiracy theorists on this particular issue. You know, it seems to me like, you know, 19 amateurs with box cutters taking over four commercial airliners and hitting 75% of their targets, that feels like a conspiracy theory.
Well, I tell you, back in 2001, everybody admits that cell phones didn't work over 3,000 feet. How were they working at 33,000, 32,000 feet? How did Al-Qaeda make NORAD stand down? Did Al-Qaeda call Mayor Willie Brown of San Francisco, as the Chronicle reported, and say, don't fly to New York? No, the White House did. Did Al-Qaeda call Salman Rushdie and say, don't fly to New York on September 11th? No, the Times of London reported that the White House did. Did Al-Qaeda run drills, CIA and Pentagon drills on the morning of 9/11 of hijacked jets hitting those exact same targets at those exact same times, and then drills the day before and drills 2 weeks before?
Yeah, the answer to that would be probably not. but no, it's just the more you look at stuff, especially specific incidents, specific events in or around the fateful day, it just raises a lot of questions. There's a lot of questions, and I know that a couple of years ago, it was you know, severely unpopular to discuss any of this. But it sort of feels like, just in my research and in the people that I talk to and in and around my circles, it seems like the worm is turning. Because you start talking about this, even with conservative Republicans, and they can't really debate away some of the most obvious facts on that day.
Let me ask my radio producer a question. Did you find that clip of Dan Rather? Let me just roll this little 30-second clip, because this is what Dan Rather thought about 20 seconds after Building 7 collapsed. They backed the tape up and played it, and this is what he said live. Go ahead and roll it.
And again, what you're seeing are high shots. Now, here we're going to show you a videotape of the collapse itself.
Describe that.
Now we go to videotape the collapse of this building.
It's amazing.
Amazing, incredible, pick your word. For the third time today, it's reminiscent of those pictures we've all seen too much on television before, when a building was deliberately destroyed by well-placed dynamite to knock it down.
All right, so there's Dan Rather, and that's what I thought that morning. That's what engineers, the heads of engineering colleges, that's what a lot of people said. Charlie, what did you think on that morning?
Well, where do we start? I was up early, actually, and we were going to do a pre-shoot on Spin City, the show I used to do. And so, gosh, I was up and I was watching the news, and the North Tower was burning. And so, you know, the world was focused on what I guess they were assuming to be pilot error, right, or some tragedy nobody could really explain. And so I saw the South Tower hit live. That famous wide shot where it disappears behind the building, and then we see the tremendous fireball, you know. And there was a feeling that it just didn't look, how do I say this, didn't look like any commercial jetliner I've flown on any time in my life. And then when the buildings came down, later on that day, I was at my parents' house, and we were out on the deck, and I said, hey, call me insane, but did it sort of look like those buildings came down in a controlled demolition? And he said, well, kind of, but gosh, that's impossible if you think about what it would take for them to orchestrate that. And so as the days and the weeks went on, I was sort of told what to believe. And I was told through mainstream media and all of the talking heads about what really happened.
Now, Charlie, when the press, hears your interview, if they think it's radical that you thought it looked like explosives, they better go talk to Dan Rather, then the host of CBS Nightly News. And we also have a clip of Peter Jennings saying the exact same thing twice.
Exactly.
He says it looks like bombs. So I guess they'll have to dig up poor Peter Jennings and gripe at him for thinking the same thing that you and I thought.
Of course, but what bothers me even more about all of this is that all of this stuff exists from day one. If you start looking at all of the news reporting after day one, the official story starts to find its way into our consciousness.
They start telling us the conspiracy theory. The conspiracy theorists in the government start telling us their wild-eyed conspiracies.
Exactly. Charlie, and so we all go away from what we felt in our gut initially.
Charlie Sheen, stay right there. We've got a break. We'll be right back. Folks, strap yourselves in. There are those attempting to break down the sovereignty and the freedoms that are in this country, and they're failing. More and more Americans, as Charlie Sheen said, are waking up. The worm has turned. And I was talking to Charlie yesterday, and I talked about how when I brought up my facts on 9/11 just days after it happened, a lot of people disagree with me now, not just on my own broadcast, but on so many other shows. Really, no one calls in to disagree. Many of you as listeners in your local area have heard me on your local station with the talk show host attacking me, and everyone calls into my defense. So people instinctively know that something is wrong, and 9/11 is just part of that. We're talking to, of course, a legendary actor, star of screen and, of course, television, poet and writer, you name it. And Charlie Sheen. Charlie, there's so many facets to 9/11, but what about WTC-7? It wasn't even hit by a building. 47-story structure has two small fires in it. A modern steel building had never collapsed from fire. The Madrid fire last year, it burned for 2 days with 150-something-foot white-hot flames, and nothing collapsed there. What happened with Building 7, in your opinion?
A little curious, isn't it? It's a little bit curious. It just seems odd that an event, something that we all witnessed, because September 11th wasn't the Zapruder film, it was the Zapruder Film Festival, okay? And I think that what was the great Hoover quote about the bigger the lie, the easier it is to pass over on people?
Yes.
I mangled it. I'm paraphrasing.
Well, no, Hitler had a similar one about the bigger the lie, the more they'll buy it.
Sure. There you go. Let me just throw out a quote, just because, we're 20 minutes into this, and I'm sure I'm being demonized across the nation by, all of the people that do that sort of thing.
But people see through the propaganda organs now like they never have before.
Well, good. Good, finally. There's a couple of quotes here. The first is, "It is unpatriotic not to tell the truth, whether about the president or anyone else." The second quote from this same gentleman is, "That we are to stand by the president, right or wrong, is not only unpatriotic and servile, but is morally treasonable to the American public." Theodore Roosevelt.
Yes, well, I mean, that's what the Founding Fathers said. It's our job to be watchdogs. The Declaration of Independence clearly states that in our seminal founding document.
Absolutely. Yeah, and we've been coerced away from these founding principles.
We've been told you're either with us or you're with the terrorist, and we've been told never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning 9/11. Bush said that at the UN.
Yes, he did. That would direct the blame away from those responsible, blah, blah, blah. Back to Building 7, yeah. You pointed out in one of your documentaries that in a classic controlled demolition that they create what's first called a crease. Is that correct? Or a wrinkle?
Crease, wrinkle, crimp, all those are used, yes. They blow the central column.
Right, and the term pull is about pulling the outer walls toward the center of the building, correct?
Yes.
So you minimize the damage, and that way you bring a building down on its own footprint, correct?
And many controlled demolition experts said they've never seen a prettier job than Building 7.
Yeah, gosh. And there was a there was a guy, I can't remember his name, but scientifically he broke down that the building actually fell faster than the speed of gravity because of the explosive vacuum that was created.
Well, a lot of different physicists, physics professor at BYU, Stephen Jones has done that. Underwriting Laboratories, Kevin Ryan, who was there.
That guy got fired, right?
Yes, he said we did our own test, and it's impossible. Steel doesn't melt until thousands of degrees. Around 3,000 it weakens, and jet fuel burns at 1,200 to 1,400. It's impossible.
Well, that's 1,200 at optimum conditions, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and then you've got Silverstein, the leaseholder, the owner of Seven, as well as the rest of the complex, right, on tape, on the record, saying, we've had such a terrible loss of life that day, and I made the decision that they should go ahead and pull it.
And we gave the order and watched the building come down.
Yeah. Well, pull is the, I mean, that's as common to the demo world as action and cut to the movie world.
In fact, in the same PBS documentary narrated by Kevin Spacey, or not Kevin Spacey, the other guy, he comes right out and says they cut to one of the other engineers demoing a building, and he says, we're getting ready to pull it. And then they pull it. We're going to come back, in fact, and play some of those clips on the other side of this quick break. I'm Alex Jones, your host, and this is the GCN Radio Network. We're talking to Charlie Sheen, and we're very honored to have him, and of course I'm flattered that he likes the documentaries. Stay with us.
The Genesis Communications Radio Network proudly presents The Alex Jones Show, because there's a war on for your mind.
Well, he comes from a family of actors, and he's one of the most accomplished. He's Charlie Sheen. They're also activist, and he has starred in over 65 major films, got a couple new ones coming out this year, and of course he'll be on tonight, 8 o'clock Central Time on CBS for Two and a Half Men, which he is the main star of the show on. But he joins us today to talk about, well, just the state of the world and some of the interesting things that are happening and some of the foundational events that are the pretext for our new way of life. America changed, they told us. Give up all your freedoms. Freedom equals safety or security. And what's the new definition of freedom? It's surveillance and not having freedom. So it's a lot of double speak and double think. And Charlie Sheen, again, is our guest. I want to play a clip. He mentioned this clip from America Rebuilds, a 2002 PBS documentary, and it is narrated by Kevin Spacey. And here is Larry Silverstein, the owner who took out $7 billion of insurance on the two towers. And he's also now bought the Sears Tower and taken out a bunch of insurance. And Governor Pataki just called him the lowest of the low in the newspaper because he's holding out for $1 billion more now. Interesting fellow, made out quite well. And here is his statement from America Rebuilds.
I remember getting a call from the fire department commander telling me that they were not sure they were going to be able to contain the fire. I said, you know, we've had such terrible loss of life. Maybe the smartest thing to do is pull it. And they made that decision to pull. And then we watched the building collapse.
They made the decision to pull. They made the decision. And this building with two small fires implodes perfectly. And then there's video from every angle of the squibs or the blast points where the plastic explosives are detonating. And you see the ejection ports. You see the blast points. Just like when you watch a Las Vegas demolition. They just had a demolition over the weekend in Fort Worth. We have video and photos of that up on InfoWars.com. Fell just like Seven. The blast, the squibs. Then the crimp in the middle, the top of the building imploding downwards, and then it falls in on itself. Going back to our guest, Mr. Sheen, that is the clip you mentioned with Mr. Silverstein.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Let me just play devil's advocate for a second, right? Again, I don't claim to be an expert about structural integrity. I don't claim to be an expert about demolitions. Could they have rigged that building during the day when they decided that the fire was out of hand, even though it was only in a couple of floors.
No way. They could have blown the whole thing to bits with just a mass of explosives down low, but they couldn't engage in precision demolitions. It would take weeks.
Okay, good. Good to know. That's what I think. But, again, I'm just throwing stuff out that somebody might present as a viable argument.
Well, the engineers that have looked at it who aren't on government payroll have said just what you're saying. The heads of mining colleges, the heads of physics departments, the head individual who checked into it from Underwriter Laboratories, they're saying what you're saying. But the problem is they tried to hire Henry Kissinger, and then they hired Keene, all Bush business partners, to run the 9/11 Whitewash Commission. What did you think of the commission?
Not much, because it didn't really answer a lot of the hard questions, you know. Let me ask you, though, how long did it take to start an investigation after, I don't know, Pearl Harbor?
About a day.
Okay. The Titanic.
It started that day.
JFK.
Started that day.
Yeah. 9/11?
Started about a year later.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the investigation was ordered to be limited in its scope?
Well, they had armed guards over every piece of steel and put GPS equipment on each piece, and if a guy pulled over to get a hamburger for 10 minutes, he'd be fired and then criminally charged. That's what they actually did, and they shipped it to China under guard.
Yeah, well, that bothers me because Giuliani, as a former prosecutor, knows the value of evidence preservation and crime scene preservation. Now, I understand that they were on the clock, and they were still looking for victims, and they were still looking for bodies, and they were still hoping beyond hope that there were survivors, but...
But not a week into it, not a month into it.
No, I know. So the thing that I can't get my mind off of is that if there's a problem with Building 7, there's a problem with the whole thing.
Well, you're right. What about firefighters on record? Major newspapers say they found three of the voice recorders, data recorders, and then the FBI said, don't tell anybody about this, and shipped them off.
Yeah, and we've never had access to that data, have we?
No.
No. Yeah, just the fact that the entire event is so shrouded in secrecy.
They were suspicious.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me ask you this, though. Everybody's now familiar with the famous Andrew Card Bush ear whisper.
Oh, yes.
At the elementary school, and that whole incident is problematic to me because, as we talked about yesterday, it was broadcast 3 days in advance. His schedule, correct? The president's schedule?
Yes, sir.
Yes. So, conservatively, if that event was being broadcast live, right?
Yes.
How many people in the state of Florida knew where the president was at that specific point in time?
Basically, the entire population that watched the TV news. It was a big event.
Okay. All right. So if, in fact, he was being informed that the second plane had hit, America's under attack, right, isn't he then putting everybody in his immediate circle at great risk?
Including that school full of elementary students.
That's what I'm talking about, yeah. Yeah, so it would seem to me that upon the revelation of that news, that the Secret Service would grab the president and remove him as if he were on fire from that room.
Well, you're right, and he was only about 10 minutes away from a major airport. I mean, and they were saying they thought there were hijackers all over the country, and everyone's in incredible fear. But George Bush, he just sits there after he's told the second plane is hit for around 20 minutes and then kind of just ambles out, taking his time. Of course, some Secret Service did say, let's get him out, and then Card and others just said, no, we're going to stay. I wonder what they knew. You know, it's funny, Jeb Bush declared martial law 3 days before, too, and that was kind of kept just a little bit quiet as well.
Did Jeb Bush ever explain why?
No, he wouldn't say why, and Bush wouldn't say why. They had massed 44,000 U.S. troops, 18,000 British troops into Tajikistan and Uzbekistan, and had carrier attack groups about to launch their attacks on Afghanistan, and he had that order signed on his desk just waiting 2 days before 9/11. That was incredibly convenient to have your whole military stacked up and ready to go into Afghanistan, something that took about 6 months to build up, I'm told.
Yeah, because you don't really put those strategies together overnight, do you?
No, they have troops in place.
For a major invasion, no. No, those are really well calculated and really well planned, at least from this government.
Well, you're right.
But let me ask you this. In a statement that the president made following, I think it was a school kid that asked him, what did you think when the first plane hit? And he said something to the effect of, I was watching it on TV like everybody else, and I thought, oh, gosh, that's pilot error, correct?
Yes.
So I guess one of the perks of being president is you get access to TV channels that don't exist in the known universe, correct?
That's right. He said, yeah, I saw it on TV, the first plane hit, and I thought, that guy's got to be a terrible pilot. Then his spokesman, a day later, because the San Francisco Chronicle did the whole timeline, his spokesman said, no, he never saw that. He didn't mean that. He wasn't even aware the first building had been hit when he went out to give the speech. But then the Times of London and AP had photos of him watching the first tower smoking after it had been announced there in the green room. So we also have a lot of lying going on.
Yeah, it might lead to believe that he'd seen similar images in some type of a rehearsal, as it were.
Yes. What did you think of the guns being taken from the pilots just a few months before in July, the federal law being changed by Bush so pilots couldn't carry firearms?
That's a little convenient, isn't it? Because that was instituted post-Cuban Missile Crisis, correct?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so that had been in place for almost 40 years. It's right in there with, I guess it was June or July of 01, when after 46 years, Cheney changed the authorization for the shoot-down orders.
Oh, that's right. Since NORAD was set up in the late 50s, generals and admirals had standing shoot-down orders of errant aircraft like Payne Stewart. They were ready in that case a few years before. But magically, he took the power away from all the generals and only gave it to himself and to his adjunct, the Secretary of Defense, Donald Rumsfeld.
Yeah. Yeah, no, again, I'm not on your show to say who did it or why, because I don't have those answers.
Yeah, we just shouldn't have an investigation by their very people that turns out to be a whitewash. I mean, the 9/11 Commission, we talked yesterday about how the commission claimed there weren't even support pillars in the middle of Tower 1 and 2 when it had the biggest columns in the world up until that time.
Yeah, it had how many?
47.
47, that's right, yeah. And it would seem to me, just based on what we've all seen, those images that are indelibly emblazoned into our memories forever, again, I don't have experience in avionics or, high-rise, mechanics, but it looked like the majority of the jet fuel upon impact exploded.
Yes, it did.
So I have a hard time believing that a fireball traveled down the elevator over 1,100 feet and still had the explosive energy to destroy the lobby like it was described.
Well, we can fill a two-hour film just with quick cuts of different firefighters and police saying they saw bombs going off, but then they were told to shut up, and then they did these after-action video reports with the firemen and police, and then the government declared national security on those tapes. Then they declared that they were destroyed. Then with a congressional order, some got released, and what are the firemen and police saying on the tapes? That they saw bombs going off in all three of the buildings.
Yeah, and this one guy in that famous clip talks about it looked like one of those, boom, 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 controlled detonations.
In fact, we have that clip. Now, there's two in the computer, John, so be careful. One hasn't been edited and has the cussing. Don't air that one. Be careful. Be sure. Last time we almost had a mistake. Can you find the one where the firefighters are saying, it looked as if they had detonators? Are you talking about that one?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And then now there are films that have come out, and of course I have all these clips, but there are films that just have that are an hour and a half of just that, Charlie.
Yeah.
Of just different firemen saying that.
Sure. And again, this is not you and I watching the video, you know, speculating about what we think we saw. These are gentlemen, you know, inside the buildings at the very point of collapse.
Let's go ahead and roll that next clip. Here it is.
Sure.
We made it outside. We made it about a block.
We made it at least 2 blocks, and we started running. Floor by floor, it started popping out.
It had detonated.
All the way down. I was watching it and running.
Just ran up west.
And then you just saw this cloud of chasing you down.
Couldn't outrun it. So what'd you do?
I jumped behind a battalion car. I hit under the car. It was waiting to die.
So, Mr. Sheen, what do you think we should do then? I mean, just as a citizen, you have that right. What do you think we should do? I mean, what would be a real investigation? What would satisfy you, who, according to most Americans in major polls, a CNN poll, 90%, a Zogby poll, 49%, take whatever poll you want, but more than half of Americans in major polls want some type of real investigation. What would you like to see?
I would like to see the same thing. I think it's got to be... It's got to be hit by, if this is possible, some neutral investigative committee. I don't know exactly how to establish that.
Well, the problem
you would know more about that than I would.
Well, the problem is they tried to, again, appoint Henry Kissinger, and they called him independent. It was like appointing one of Janet Reno's deputies to investigate Waco and calling it independent. What would be independent? Maybe just randomly pick 20 engineers or something and then draft them for a committee and then make sure no one tried to intimidate the witnesses. I mean, maybe just a jury of the peers.
What if we used, like, retired political foreign nationals? What if we use experts that don't have any ties whatsoever to this administration?
Well, Michael Meacher, a number three in the Blair government, says that he believes the government may be behind it. And then we have Andres von Bülow, the former German defense minister, saying the same thing. So, and a bunch of other Russian and other foreign leaders are saying the same thing. Over 80% of the French public in major polls say our government did it. So, boy, if we got foreigners to do it, I think they come to the same conclusion we have.
Right. But I'm just saying, as far as people that don't have a stake or don't have an interest or don't, you know, aren't controlled.
Oh, I agree with you. I agree with you. I'm just saying that they would come to the same conclusion.
Yeah.
Well, I guess in the court of public opinion, I would say that people aren't buying the official story.
No, they're not. They're not. And I would place myself in that court. But, you know, so we've talked about Building 7, right? And that whole episode really smells a rat. But then you've got to sort of shift the focus to the Pentagon.
Very suspicious.
You know, are we coming up on a break? Should we come back to the Pentagon after the break?
Yeah, let's do that after the break. But in the minute and a half or so we've got right now.
Okay.
What about PNAC, Project for New American Century? Dick Cheney pins a piece in September 2000 titled "Rebuilding America's Defenses," and he says we need a Pearl Harbor event to catalyze the American people to invade the Middle East. We need to have a terror attack on the order of Pearl Harbor, and then Brzezinski goes further. He says we need a helpful Pearl Harbor event.
Yeah. Coincidence? We think not. No, it's I think again it's emblematic of the arrogance of this administration. Even just that video that was released last week, I believe, the interview prior to Katrina, and I mean it's not like there's, you know, again, supposition. It's documented quotes on videotape. And the White House comes out and says, well, you can't really look to that as any, you know, clear-cut example of what we knew.
Yeah, FEMA said it's going to probably destroy the city. The Houston Chronicle reported that. Times-Picayune Unit reported it. Everybody knew. And then Bush goes off on vacation.
Yeah. No, it's, again, it is a very arrogant administration.
Well, what about him today? Mr. Sheen's saying that Iraq's better off and everything's going great.
Yeah, I don't know that they're talking about the same Iraq that you and I are observing.
I agree with you. We'll be right back. Amazing interview, the conclusion on the other side. Well, I talk talked to him during the break, and he has really been a champ, spending a whole hour of his precious time with us. He's going to leave us in just about 4 minutes, 5 minutes, and go work on his TV show today. 2.5 Men will be on tonight, 8 o'clock, CBS. But I was talking to him yesterday, and he talked about some of the folks there where he works and a story that one of the crew told him, and it meshes with this article out of Knight Ridder today. Pentagon hired contractors to advise on collecting information on churches, mosques, and other U.S. sites spying on American citizens. Here's another one. Washington Post, advance workers for Bush impersonated reporters. They're all over the place posing as reporters spying on people, and advance teams doing that. And they just do this all over the place. Charlie, your take on that?
Well, yeah, there's a young guy that, this young kid at work, he's from Nigeria, and he's in the production department. And he sort of overheard a conversation. I was talking about the events of 9/11 and this and that, and he said, you know, it was interesting because at the time he was attending George Washington University in downtown D.C., and he said the day after the event that federal teams of what they were described as trauma counselors came to his school, came to his college, came into the classrooms and basically told them, you're all in shock. What we've seen is unlike anything we've ever witnessed. We understand that in moments like this, that your memory, your eyes will play tricks on you in the future. So if anybody's questioning, you know, what we're telling you has happened, do not believe what you think you know about yesterday. Basically telling them that here's the story, follow it, have a good day.
I have questions about the Pentagon, so do you. Why did they grab hundreds of surveillance camera tapes and declare national security? Why won't they just show us the footage of what happened?
Show us this incredible maneuvering. Just show it to us. Just show us, you know, how this particular plane pulled off these maneuvers. What was it, a 270-degree turn at 500 miles an hour, descending 7,000 feet in 2.5 minutes, skimming across the treetops, the last 500 meters,
you can't
4 feet off the ground.
I have talked to pilots who've flown that very aircraft, that very type, and they say that at 500 and something miles an hour, you cannot fly that low to the ground.
Yeah, no, if that happened and there are that many cameras on it, you know, I understand in the interest of national security that maybe not release the Pentagon cameras, but what about the Sheraton? What about the gas station? What about the Department of Transportation freeway cam? What about all these shots that had this thing perfectly documented? Instead, they put out 5 frames that they claim not to have authorized, correct?
And it doesn't look like a passenger liner. It looks like some type of small white aircraft or drone.
It's really suspicious. And then if you look in the lower left-hand corner at the date stamp, it's September 12th. It's just...
As usual, nothing they say fits. Nothing at any point. Everything they say turns out to be a fraud.
Yeah, but this whole thing about, well, the plane disintegrated and this and that. Now, I don't know what a Boeing, you know, what that jet is going to do into a, you know, reinforced limestone facade.
But it did disappear like the Wicked Witch when water hit her. It just all went into a 14-foot hole.
Exactly. But this whole thing about, even if you just take the one statement about the wings folding up, it seems like at that impact velocity, everything is still going the same speed.
You know what, Mr. Sheen, Charlie Sheen, we've got to get you back up in the near future. And, of course, you and I are going to be working on something in the near future, and I'm really honored to be collaborating with you. And I want to thank you for joining us. Closing comments in the last 30 seconds.
Last 30 seconds, it is up to us to reveal the truth. It is up to us because we owe it to the families. We owe it to the victims. We owe it to everybody whose life was drastically altered, horrifically, that day and forever. We owe it to them.
We do. Mr. Sheen.
To uncover what happened.
Yes, sir. Godspeed. You got a lot of courage. Thank you for joining us.